Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, next week is good news enough because, yay, we get the sixth Republican presidential debate. But 2 days before that, we get what will be a very annoying final State of the Union address from the president. But don't miss the headline there. It is his final State of the Union address. It's the last one we'll have to sit through. And the news we heard yesterday is that it will be South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley who will be giving the Republican response to the president's State of the Union address. So that is officially our good martini today. And of course, the rebuttal never, ever matches the grandeur of the president speaking to the joint session of Congress. It's a much shorter speech. It's a different setting. And usually the rebuttals are more known for things that go wrong, like Marco Rubio reaching for a bottle of water, than anything that's actually said. But Nikki Haley is someone who is obviously a rising star in the GOP. She resoundingly won re-election last year. And overall, I think most people think this is a really good choice.
One thing I would point out is that on paper, this is a great opportunity to take a rising star in the party and give them the national spotlight for about 20 minutes in primetime. On paper, this should be perfectly fine. Apparently, at some point, the Republican Party hit a gypsy woman. She put a curse on this. And it was, she said that forevermore, whoever gives the response to the State of the Union shall befall some terrible fate and terrible luck afterwards. Last year, Joni Ernst gave it. And while she's not had a bad year, I think some people felt that her tone was a little bit off. Obviously, Rubio in the water. Suddenly gripped by senatorial dehydration. Paul Ryan gave the response in 2011. The following year, he ran, was vice president nominee with Romney and did not win. Michelle Bachmann gave the unofficial Tea Party response in 2011 as well. People may remember her strangely looking off camera as if someone, they didn't tell her which way it was. Do you remember who did it in 2010, Greg?
Was that your good friend Bobby Jindal?
No, Bob McDonnell. Currently on the run like Richard Kimball. No, but you're right. The previous year, it was Bobby Jindal. That technically, the first year of presidency, it's not really considered a State of the Union. It's a joint address to Congress because they just took office. I don't think it was that bad, but I am a ludicrous homer. This is not his finest hour. Now, there's some good news. Apparently, this does work both ways. I don't know if you remember, Greg. 2008, Bush's final year, gave the response?
Not a clue.
Kathleen Sebelius. Fast forward a few years, and she's totally forgetting to tell the president of the United States that healthcare.gov did not work. 2002, who gave the response to Bush in the first post 9/11 State of the Union?
Nope.
Dick Gephardt.
Okay.
In 2 years, Rand, presidential campaign crashed and burned. Finally, 1996. Take a guess, Greg.
Dole?
You got it. Later that year, ran and lost. So it is, on the one hand, we all feel really sad for Nikki Haley. She's a really great governor, great woman who doesn't deserve this terrible fate. On the other hand, maybe she's the one who's going to turn around and get the success. The other thing is that, look, South Carolina, obviously a very big primary. Last time around, she endorsed Romney. You think she's certainly a possibility to endorse this time around. And obviously having the national stature, I think this probably enhances it a bit and may give her endorsement a bigger deal. And then finally, look, she's probably going to be, if not on the short list, let's say the medium to short list as running mates. And if she hits it out of the park on this, maybe there's a strong candidate for a woman on the ticket in 2016.
Has there ever been anyone's career who's been markedly helped by giving the rebuttal?
I mean, okay. Two, they come to mind. I'm going even further back.
Okay.
I want to say the first one after like 94, 95 was Christy Todd Whitman.
Okay.
And it was the first, and conservatives may not have a warm, fuzzy feeling towards her, but she had just beaten Florio. It was a big upset address to the state legislature in New Jersey. And it was the one time that the Republican response looked as good as the president because it was another big address to a full chamber of people applauding and stuff like that. I'm kind of surprised they haven't done that more often. Kind of an interesting, counter visual there. And who did a really good job the one time? I want to say 95, 90. It was after the Republican takeover of Congress in 94.
Okay.
Fred Thompson.
Ah.
Let's face it. Fred Thompson's awesome at everything. So. Not that surprising.
No.
I don't think at any point he said, you know, rack 'em, stack 'em, and jack 'em or anything like that. But look, you know, if anybody could, you know, could keep people's attention for 15, 20 minutes, there's a good chance it's Fred Thompson.
Yes. Fred Thompson could have sold ice to an Eskimo or at least a reversible home mortgage.
Yes. There you go. Or a reverse mortgage. Yes.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, if this weren't so serious, we could have some cartoon fun with the H-bomb of justice. North Korea tested a hydrogen nuclear bomb on Wednesday, state news agency KCNA reported, marking the politically isolated country's first nuclear test in 3 years, a move that was condemned by the U.S., Britain, Japan, among others. I'm guessing South Korea is probably among the others. The report on KCNA's website came within hours of reports from various agencies that a large earthquake had been detected near a known North Korean nuclear test site. According to KCNA, North Korea tested a miniaturized hydrogen nuclear bomb, quote, in the most perfect manner, unquote, putting it in possession of hydrogen bomb capability, which it described as, quote, the most powerful nuclear deterrent. North Korea wanted what it called the H-bomb of justice as protection from the ever-growing nuclear threat and blackmail, as it calls it, by the U.S.-led hostile forces. So the slight good news here is there's a lot of people who don't believe that they actually tested a hydrogen bomb. I guess we've got some sniffer planes that can go out and figure out if they actually did detonate one of these things, even if it was underground. But here's Jim Mikleshevsky of NBC at the Pentagon explaining what North Korea might have in its arsenal if, in fact, it can produce a hydrogen bomb.
A hydrogen bomb would be 1,000 times more powerful than an atomic bomb. Just to put that into perspective, it actually takes a small atomic bomb planted inside the hydrogen bomb to ignite that thermonuclear device. Now, according to officials, even more alarming is the fact that a hydrogen bomb could be made much smaller than an atomic bomb and easily put on the kind of long-range ballistic missiles that North Korea already has.
Happy New Year, everyone.
From what he's describing there, Greg, it sounds like the hydrogen bomb is kind of the turducken of bombs. See, what you do is, as John Madden would explain, you take the atomic bomb and you put it inside the nuclear bomb, and then you surround it with a turkey and the hydrogen bomb. You're telling me that the primary confirmation of this claim by the North Koreans is that they had an earthquake in a particular area. Is that correct, Greg?
Correct.
Are we totally sure it wasn't just Fatso over there jumping up and down?
Bring me more cheese.
There you go. Look, technically, this is bad news. But here's the thing. Once North Korea is allegedly in a, you know, an atomic bomb state, a nuclear bomb state, I don't think the hydrogen bomb dramatically, you know, alters the calculus here. He's still a maniac, but, you know, and they tend to do this when they want something, when they want attention, when they want concessions, they want aid, they want money. Now, having said that, remember, this was the era in which, you know, at one point, you know, Barack Obama was talking about a nuclear free world. We're going to totally not have any nuclear weapons. Now Iran's got a nuclear program, and North Korea like is basically jumping up and expanding this. I'm actually less worried about North Korea building bigger bombs and the possibility of the technology proliferating. No hesitation about selling and dealing with other rogue regimes, and that's what really worries me about this regime. Definitely something to keep an eye on in the months and years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, no administration has had a very good policy towards North Korea since the nuclear threat popped up, that's for sure. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And Donald Trump, according to most polls, is behind by a little bit in Iowa, so guess what issue is popping up now? According to the Washington Post, Donald Trump said in an interview that rival Ted Cruz's Canadian birthplace was a very precarious issue that could make the senator from Texas vulnerable if he became the Republican presidential nominee. Quote, Republicans are going to have to ask themselves the question, do we want a candidate who could be tied up in court for 2 years? That'd be a big problem, Trump said when asked about the topic. It'd be a very precarious one for Republicans because he'd be running and the courts may take a long time to make a decision. You don't want to be running and have that kind of thing over your head. Trump added, quote, I'd hate to see something like that get in his way, but a lot of people are talking about it, and I know that even some states are looking at it very strongly, the fact that he was born in Canada and he has had a double passport. I'm sure Trump would hate to see something like that get in his way, Jim.
Do you ever hear kind of like a 30s mobster when Trump talks like this? Ah, nice candidacy you got there, Cruz. Be a shame if something happened to it. Be a shame if somebody said you were Canadian and ineligible for the presidency. I don't know who would do that sort of thing. So two observations. One is that there's very little argument for this. The only people say, well, it hasn't been decided because the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on this yet. Well, the reason is the Supreme Court doesn't want to deal with this. There have been subsequent decisions. There was a back in 2008, remember, there was controversy, alleged controversy, I should even say. I don't think it necessarily rose to that. John McCain was born in the Panama Canal Zone.
Right.
And there was a 100-0 resolution by the Senate saying, yes, you know, John McCain is an American citizen and eligible for the presidency. This is ridiculous. Romney was born in, I believe, Mexico or something like that.
His dad was.
Circumstances. Look, the guy's a you know, U.S. citizen. Barry Goldwater was born in a territory, not a state. And people – look, there's very little the odds are probably less than 1% that any court would ever rule that Ted Cruz – correction – any court that wasn't stacked with maniac left-wing, you know, judicial activists would argue that Ted Cruz is not a natural-born American citizen and completely eligible for the presidency. Donald Trump is bringing this up because he kind of wants to play the birther card against against Cruz. If we lose this, if for some reason this derails Ted Cruz in Iowa, Greg, this might be enough to say, okay, this is not my party anymore. I don't recognize it. I don't understand it. This doesn't make any sense to me. Unless, Greg, I've been suckered into the great Canadian plot put their man into the presidency. You know, they're going to come back. They'll take back the Washington Nationals. They'll change Z to Z, ban fourth down, make Celine Dion's The Heart Will Go On the national anthem. No, Canadian Ted Cruz will turn America into the U.S. of A.
Oh man, there'll be Molson at every state dinner.
Excuse me. If you know, if this is the great Canadian takeover of the United States, Greg, good donuts. We're polite. Good cold beer. You know, actually not so bad. Poutine. I can live with that. So
good hockey. You know.
Yeah.
You care about that sort of thing. So could be worse. Even if he is a Manchurian Canadian candidate, he really can't be a Manchurian Canadian candidate, though. I guess you'd have to be.
I was gonna say the Bay-Canadian.
Oh, man.
I know. We get syrupy to the end of the podcast.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.